Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Power of Love Radio Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power of Love Radio Show, sponsored by the Dede Jackson Foundation. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. I am TJ Jackson, and I am with my brother, Terrell Jackson.
Hello, everyone.
And Taj Jackson.
Hello.
How are you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Doing well.
So, first of all, we'll do our disclaimer before we talk about our guest, because we have a great guest in, so we're going to get right into it. I'm not going to even talk to you guys about your weeks, because...
Understandable.
But we are live on the Power of Love show. Actually, we're not live. This is pre-recorded, but so I shouldn't have said that. But it's still an amazing episode, right?
Yes.
Okay. But we are not licensed therapists. We are just ordinary people who have experienced loss in our lives, and we've been impacted by it, and we've learned from it. And we want to share our opinions in an attempt to help you overcome what you are going through. Saying that, if you need professional help, we urge you to seek it and find it, to not just rely on us. And today we have someone who is a clinical psychologist, is a pastor and founder of Stephen Ministries, and in talking to him for the last 15, 20 minutes, he's a great mind on this topic of grief that I know my brothers could agree with me, is that it's kind of a tough topic to discuss, but a tough topic to grasp and understand. We have with us Dr. Kenneth Hauk, all the way from Missouri.
Yes.
Good to see you.
Good to be here. Good to see you.
Great voice, too.
Yes.
Great voice. I wish I had a voice like that. I really do. But you're from Indiana.
I am from Indiana,
My father.
Yes.
Yeah, so Dr. Ken asked where we are from, and when I said we were from L.A., he looked a little disappointed.
Yes.
Because we're not from the... what's the state? The Indiana? What's the what state?
Indiana?
Yeah. The Hoosier state.
The Hoosier state. There you go.
Yes.
But we visit every now and then, every year, and it is a wonderful state.
Yeah, when you think of Indiana, you think of basketball.
For sure.
Yes.
For sure. A lot of great basketball players came. I don't know if they still are, but I'm sure they are.
Yeah, I'm sure too.
I'm sure they are. But you've written so many books, so many great books. And I was just telling you a little earlier, as our listeners know, when we lost our mother, I was just 16. And I was such a big, avid reader that I was so disappointed on the book selections that were out there. And I remember, I got a lot of my resources and information from books. And there was really not much out there. And when you came in with all these books that you presented to us, just the titles alone would have grabbed me. And I, first of all, want to thank you for providing that resource to those who are dealing with loss. And grief,
yeah.
It's amazing.
Thank you.
So before we get into some of the book titles and some of the questions we have about them, I guess what is the biggest obstacle for those who are just dealing with a grief or dealing with the loss? What would be your go-to advice, short answer advice for someone who's dealing with some type of loss?
I think the main obstacle is not thinking that what you're feeling is normal. If you believe that what you are feeling is normal, it's going to go a long way.
Mm.
I think people, when they lose somebody and they're having all these kinds of feelings, they think or ask, "What's wrong with me? I'm abnormal." I guess what I want to say is to the great majority of people who lose a loved one and have all sorts of feelings coming from all over the place, and you have feelings that you got different feelings, you got feelings bouncing off walls, you got different feelings. You might have a feeling of sadness bouncing off a wall and the a feeling of anger is bouncing off another wall and they're colliding in the middle. And I guess what I would say to people is when you have these kinds of feelings, when you lose a loved one, you're normal, it's typical, and it's okay. And it's also healthy to have those feelings.
So is it right to assume that sometimes society kind of, I don't want to say punishes, but labels you or tries to conform you back into a certain normality?
Oh, yeah. Everybody. I think, you know, it depends on who you lose, but I think society sometimes say, well, you've got about 3 weeks, and why aren't you feeling better after 3 weeks? And sometimes society will tell you, or people will say, you need to move on with your life. And I want to say, that's probably been said in the history of the world billions of times, and I think probably never has that statement been received warmly by anybody. I don't know. Did anybody ever say to you guys, you need to move on with your life?
So what would what do you what does Dr. Ken say to someone who is grieving, someone who's struggling? They just lost their everything from their favorite pet to, you know, a parent got seriously injured or any serious trauma that a person who's struggling, what would you say, what's the right thing, what's the best way to help them?
Yeah, and could I do something real here?
Please, please.
I mean, you guys lost your mom in 1994, and I guess I want to say, and I'm not just doing this because, you know, it's the thing to do, but I just want to say to you guys, I'm really sorry you lost your mom. I mean, that's horrible to lose a mom.
And you know what, real quick, it's, as I get older, it's different, I don't want to say different waves, but different things make me feel the loss of my mom.
Right.
From, I remember when I first had my kids, then the wave of, my kids don't have a grandmother, or I don't have that parent that I trust with advice to help me through this.
Yeah.
And even recently, it's like, you know, I'm in the process of moving, and to have an extra eyes on my family or help with my kids would be so welcoming right now that I don't have, you know?
Yes.
It's just constant, you're dealing with the loss of our mom, and it's really starting to, I don't want to say really start to register, but I'm really feeling it in different ways I never would have predicted I'd feel it in.
Yeah, yeah. So you asked, what do you say to somebody who's grieving? I think the first thing when you see them, you say, hi. The second thing you say, it's good to see you. The third thing, maybe this is a toss-up. The third thing, maybe you could say, I'm sorry. I am so sorry you lost whoever you lost. And then what's the fourth thing? You hug them. And you may hug them for a long time. And then you say, and I am sorry. I really am sorry. And that's all you can say. There is nothing that you can say that's magical that's going to help them feel better. But what's kind of interesting is when you do say you're sorry and you hug them, and maybe you might even cry a little bit too, that people sometimes feel better. But the thing of it is they tend not to feel better when you're trying to force them into feeling better. I know teenagers are oftentimes said, you need to be strong. Wow. I don't think anybody's ever received that well. You know, you're not feeling strong. You're feeling weak, and it's okay. You should feel weak.
And I love that advice because, as I've said, and my brothers are probably sick of me saying this, and he already knows where I'm saying it, but the single most important hug I ever received was from my Uncle Jermaine right after my mother passed. Maybe 4 hours after I found out, once we got released from the hospital and came back home, he gave me a hug that was very, what you were saying reminded me of what he did. He just said, I'm sorry, and gave me a hug, and a long hug. And that was pretty much it. It was no long, you know, no long talk, no long anything. It's just that hug. And I always say it's the single most important hug I've ever received. And from that moment, I felt like I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
It's painful. It hurts. But I'll survive this. Because before that hug, I was nothing. yeah. you know, and that hug was the first bit of life I had received. You know, and it was a hug, and it was a simple word from my Uncle Jermaine. I would have never predicted it coming from him.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been anyone. It could have been anyone in my family or friends, but he was the first one there, and the way he hugged me so tight, it was so powerful for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I thank you for that advice.
Yeah.
What kinds of emotional challenges are most frequent for those who experience grief?
Oh, wow. Sadness, I think, is a big one. Just really, you know, you just feel rotten. Fear is another one. What am I going to do? Because I've lost this person probably provided a certain amount of security mm-hmm. for you. What am I going to do? I am scared. I remember I'm actually a little bit shy. My wife wasn't. So we'd go to church, and we'd go to the coffee hour. And, you know, you get coffee, and you stand around, and you talk to people. I would follow her around. She would be very outgoing and talk to people, and I'd just kind of follow her along around and just stand there. And then I would talk, you know, kind of one talk, too. Now, when I go to events like this, I don't have Joan around to be my lead person.
Mm.
And I've worked on it, and I can do it,
mm.
but it's not easy. So, you lose all these things, and you know, not only do you lose the person, you have a lot of secondary losses. Yeah. I mean, you lose somebody who you can co-parent with. You know, I bet.
Yeah.
You know, when you lost your mom, your dad was like he was a single parent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you might have asked him for advice, and he tried his best to give you good advice, but there's nothing better mm-hmm. than to have a partner mm-hmm. to run some ideas by, and then you come up with a suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that is tough. And I remember my for about 6 months after I lost my wife, my daughter Amity mm-hmm. was living at home. She was just finishing up college, and I remember one time, I was sitting in the living room, and she was up on the third floor in a bedroom way up there. And I just started crying, and I was crying audibly. I mean, I was really crying very loud. And Amity came down, and she said, "Dad, I heard you crying." And I said, "Yeah, I was." And that was so cool.
Mm.
And here, I'll tell you this, too, is the more I have been able to cry in my life, because I'm a guy, the healthier I am, you know?
Yeah, we talked about that about 3 weeks ago, about
okay.
that same thing about guys crying and how, for me, society's made it seem acceptable, but it really is freeing, and it's important to do as a guy
can,
as well.
Yeah, can you speak on that a little bit?
Well, Terrell's the one that would always apologize for crying. When my mom passed and we talk about it, we always call him the more emotional one, but I always told him, like, I'm happy you have something that, like, I toughened up when my mom passed. I was the older brother, so
uh-huh.
I in my head was my mom saying, "Be strong for your brothers, be strong for your brothers, you're the man of the house." So I had to play that role, so I didn't have the same emotion. I had the same emotions, but I couldn't show it the same way. While he was different, and I always admired him for being able to cry and all that. And so that's what we were talking about in terms of guys crying and that acceptance.
What are your thoughts on that?
You mean on guys crying?
Yeah, I just want our listeners to hear your thoughts.
I think it is really cool. And I think 99% of the time when guys cry, it is the right thing to do. It does not demonstrate weakness. I think one of the ways to demonstrate strength is to cry.
Yeah.
I mean, you see this now a lot more on TV when sports teams lose. I mean, you know, you work your tail off and you almost won the NBA and you lost it. I mean, that's really sad.
Yeah.
Or you lose the World Series or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So if it's sad, cry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, one of the things, I don't think any of these people who cried, even on television or whatever it is, were so incapacitated that they didn't function. they were able to go in and shower and get their clothes on and put a tie on, if that's the way they're supposed to dress, and get on the plane and fly back or whatever. I think, you know, crying is really good for anybody, and as long as you keep functioning. I've got a friend who just retired. He was a commercial airline pilot, and I used to, his dad died, and he was still a pilot at that time. And I said to him, I said, Dale, you know, cry anytime. Just it's really good to cry, except when you're at work.
Yeah. We are here talking with Dr. Ken Houck. And he is from Stephen Ministries. Please do yourself a favor. Check out the website. It's www.stephenministries.org. Please do yourself a favor. There's so many great books. There's so many great resources for you, for our listeners who are dealing with grief. And one of the things... There's several books of yours that I want to talk about, but the first one I want to start with is Journeying Through Grief, okay. Which is it's a four set, correct?
Yes.
So it's four small, easy-to-read books.
Yes.
Let me ask you this real quick. Why four books and not just one?
Okay. First of all, these books are about 40 pages long each, and they're pretty large print. Mm-hmm. They are designed to be sent to grieving people 3 weeks, 3 months, 6 months, and 11 months after a loved one passes. One reason why it's four is it's easier to read a 40-page book than a 160-page book. But the other reason it's like that is that we researched what people were going through at 3 weeks after the loss of a loved one. And so we spoke to them as if, you know, they spoke to them as a three-week survivor, a three-week griever. Same thing with 3 months, same thing with 6 months and 11 months. For example, at 11 months, you're starting to think about the one-year anniversary of the loss of your loved one. So we have material in there. We speak to the one-year anniversary. And we also communicate in that book that just because the one-year anniversary hits doesn't mean that you're over. You're over with grief. You still can feel a lot.
Interesting. Now, the four books... I'm going to try to list them in the proper order. The first one, A Time to Grieve.
Okay.
The second one, Experiencing Grief. The third one, Finding Hope and Healing. And the fourth one, Rebuilding and Remembering. My question to you is there, I know they're all important, they're a series, but is there one that you just feel, if you're going to read one, don't miss this?
Wow. Well, if you've just lost a loved one in the past few weeks, then the first one.
Okay.
I often find it's very interesting is that you lose somebody and you read a book at 3 weeks and 3 months and 6 months. At the 6 month period is the time when a lot of people hit the wall.
Why?
I don't know. And so we wrote this book as if people are hitting the wall. Mm. I don't know. It's 6 months ago and you're still feeling bad. I remember it was very interesting. I got two telephone calls from two friends, Tom Shaneer, a friend of mine from high school. And he called me and he says, Ken, I know it's 6 months since you lost Joan. I just want to call and find out how you're doing.
Wow.
And I told him how I was doing.
So that phone call was an important phone call.
It was. I remember that. You know, you get a lot of phone calls right after you lose somebody.
Mm-hmm.
If you really want to be cool and if you want somebody to really remember you, call them right away, but wait 6 months and call them at 6 months, and they're going to say, wow, that was really significant.
I love that.
I love that advice.
Mm-hmm. That's something you would do, Taj.
Yeah.
Didn't you do that with a friend that had passed?
Yeah. Because I remember that for me, you remember all the people that they're in the way beginning, but then it kind of dies off, and that's the thing. Then there are certain people that come back and say, how are you doing now? And those are the people that I really remember in terms of when I was grieving. And so I make it a point when my friends have a loss is to check up on them. And not only for that first year, but also just see how they're doing. So
all four books, to short answer, all four books are incredibly important.
Yeah.
This is great, though. Like, I wish this...
right, Taj?
I was introduced to this when Mom passed, because it would have been super helpful. I remember the books that were offered to me, you know, the Who Moved My Cheese or whatever.
That's not from 1994, was it back then?
Yeah.
Who Moved My Cheese?
Yeah, it was.
I think so.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I'm Lisa Jones was the one that gave me that book. And it was helpful to a point, but it didn't...
Isn't that a business book?
It's more about dealing with change, you know? Okay. And so that, for me, I identified with it a little, but it was not about grief. Yeah. And, you know,
I think that's a business book, too, Todd. Well, maybe for all types of
change.
Maybe
for you, it was a business book.
Yeah, I did read a lot of business books. Okay, so we've talked about what to do to help someone who's grieving. What do you not do, or what's the wrong thing to say to someone who's grieving?
Okay. let me just say, one of the things, try not to say, and I say it. I remember the first time I visited a funeral home after my wife died, a father of a good friend, or actually her husband I work with, her dad died, and he was like 92, and he was in failing health for the last 2 years. So I went to the funeral home, and the first thing I said to my colleague, David Papp, I said, "How are you?" or "How you doing?" And I immediately said, "Oh, no, I shouldn't have said that." Yeah. He said, "That's okay." He said, "I'm doing okay. You know, Dad," or whatever he called him, "is, you know, he had a great life, and we're feeling all right now. But I'd say try not to say how you doing, because, and by the way, I did this another time too, but if you try to avoid that. And if you say it, maybe even say, "Oh, no, I shouldn't have asked that question. I'm sorry."
Address it.
But I would say, I should have said to David and Pat, my friends, and Heidi, their daughter, "It's good to see you. It's good to see you." Mm-hmm. And then just wait. You don't have to fill it in with a lot of words, a lot of bad things to say. Right.
I think that's excellent. I really do, because, again, back to my hug with Tong Chun, I don't even remember the conversation. I think there wasn't really a conversation. I think it was a lot of silence, and a lot of times silence can speak volumes. It's a pretty cool quote.
Yeah,
but I just think a lot of times that there's, you know, just the presence and just that if you can connect emotionally to let them know you're there, I think that's the thing. Are you gonna say something?
No.
Okay,
I didn't want to interrupt.
Okay, well, so the four books, Journeying Through Grief. I love how you did it. It's something that I would definitely wish I could have done. I love the fact that they're four short books, how the writing's big. I love how you did that. So thank you for doing that, because one big book may have turned a lot of people off. Mm-hmm. But do yourself a favor. Go get the four short books and listen to Dr. Ken. Read them at the appropriate times. Don't just go through them.
Yeah, I have a question. Were they all written together? Was it one big book and then you cut it up into four, or...
We started out writing four books, but we wrote them at the same time.
Okay, so in your mind, you always wanted four different, and the time, they were all written at the same time.
Yeah, they were, okay. Yes.
So another book, again, www.stephenministries.org, and that's Stephen, P-H, Stephen, STEPHENMINISTRIES.org. Another book that caught my eye was Don't Sing Songs to a Heavy Heart. How to relate to those who are suffering. We talked about what to say, kind of what not to say. But what you said, that book was more for caregivers, for family. So explain what that book is about.
It's subtitled "How to Relate to Those Who Are Suffering," and what do you say when you talk to somebody who's just been divorced or has just found out that they've diagnosed with a very serious illness? What do you say to them? And this is a book for caregivers. I like to say it's the book that people should read before they visit somebody in the hospital.
So it's a book you should have the knowledge of before something even happens.
I think so. And I think also, things you can say to your kids too.
Right.
You know, let's say your kid gets cut from a sports team. Mm-hmm. You know, you say to them, "I'm really sorry. I am really sorry. Darn it! I wish you could have made that team." You don't say, "Well, look, you play other sports, and just think, you're a straight A student, and whatever it is." All you'd say to your kid is, "I'm sorry. I wish so much that I wish you could have made that team."
So what is the reasoning for, because I think a lot of our listeners, especially who tend to be female, would probably try to, quote-unquote, encourage by, I don't want to say encourage, maybe that's the wrong word, but would try to...
Soften the blow.
By saying exactly what you said. You know, you're really good at this sport, or this coach doesn't know what they're missing out on, or whatever the reason. What is your reasoning for not doing that and just to basically say, "I'm sorry"?
Because they're hurting. They're hurting, and if you, it's glossing over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you try to soften the blow. You can't soften the blow. They've got to experience the entire blow fully.
Mm.
And you know, I remember I'm a big St. Louis Cardinals fan, and I remember in 2013 and they lost the World Series, and I was really sad. And I was sad for about a week after that. And people would ask me, "How you doing, Ken?" And I said, "I'm doing fine, you know, I'm going to work, but I'm really sad about the St. Louis Cardinals losing the World Series." And here's what a lot of people said to me. They said, "Well, there's always next year." Yeah. I said, "Yeah, but that is next April. It's now November. Or they say, "You know, they gave it a good try." Yes, but they didn't win. Or, "Making it to the World Series is good in itself." Yes, it is. But they lost, and I'm feeling bad.
Yeah.
I ran into, a couple of weeks ago, you know, Clemson played University of Alabama in the football final, the championship, the college football championship. And I ran into somebody. He was actually in one of our training events. Ran into him in a restaurant, and... he's from Alabama, I think, or he was an Alabama fan. And I told him, I said, "I'm really sorry about that. I said, are you feeling depressed?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, and then I told him about my St. Louis Cardinals story. He said, "Thank you." He said, "That makes me feel better."
Mm.
Giving him permission to feel depressed makes him feel less depressed.
Wow.
So don't try to cheer people up or say, "It was so close." And I don't know if you guys watched that game.
Oh, no, yeah. It was a great game.
Alabama lost in the last second, almost.
Where's the line? Because what if I were to say to them, "You should have won that game"? That's a little bit too harsh, or you guys had it? Or at what point do you... Like, it's such a... because I want to be... What I'm getting from Dr. Ken is to be open. It's to let them know it's okay to lose. But at what point do you, like, go overboard? You're not following? No,
what I'm getting is that it's okay to feel sad and being depressed. And instead, you know, oftentimes what people do is they try to steer you away from your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And what you need to do is allow them to feel that pain, to feel that loss, instead of trying to cover it up and make them feel better, because they're going to deal with it either way.
Is that pretty much? Betcha. Then after you do that, after you've said you're sorry, after they've talked about their feelings, and then you could say to them, "By the way, I was really pulling for you. And, you know, by the way, I think you had the better team. But darn it, I'm sorry you lost." Then you can say that again.
Mm-hmm. So you really have to connect with them and understand their pain and allow them to feel that way.
Yeah. And don't worry about next year. Don't worry about playing the pros or anything like that.
Don't soften
the blow. Let the blow happen.
Yeah.
My grandson tried out for basketball. He played basketball 7th and 8th grade. Got to high school, tried out. He got cut. And he was sad. And I said, "I'm sorry about that." And actually... he should have hustled more, and he said that. "I should have hustled more." And I said to him, "Yeah, you probably should have. And that's all right." But I said, "But I'm still sad that you didn't make it, because I really wanted you to make it."
And that's what I'm trying to get to. The grandson said, "I should have hustled more." And Dr. Ken said, "Yeah, you probably should have, but, you know, I'm sorry."
Right. Or Michael Jordan, like, you don't say, so Michael Jordan didn't make the high school team.
Right, right.
That doesn't help.
But at what point does Dr. Ken beat the grandson to the punch and say, could you have hustled more? Do you ever pull that out of the one who's hurting, or do you let them control the whole conversation?
I'd say you let them control the entire conversation. Okay. And follow their lead. Now, 3 weeks or 3 months later, when he and I are out fishing, and we're talking about life, and maybe we're talking about him applying for something or trying another sport, and I said, you know, I remember we were talking that you didn't hustle as much as you could have for basketball. And he said, yeah, I feel bad about that. And I said, well, you're going to be trying out now for water polo. Do you think maybe you learned from that experience? Mm-hmm. And he would say, probably, yeah, Grandpa, I did.
And great.
What you got to say, I mean, you know, your program is the power of love. You say, Caleb, I love you very much, but I want you to play water polo because I think it's fun to watch, and I want to come watch you play.
Yeah. Mm. That's great.
That is great.
Yeah.
That's great. You guys have anything? Any questions?
That makes sense to me.
Taj?
I do have a question. This is about the four books.
Yeah.
You have such a great voice. Do you have audio books of this, or have you thought about doing an audio version of it?
Like, you know, I don't. Yeah, we've had that question asked of us. And I don't know what we may have an audio version.
Okay,
I don't know that. I should know the answer to that question.
I mean, just because it's so important, and we like to read, like the three of us, and so a book would have been great. But I know there's people that
you're softening the blow. You're trying to say that the next generation is not.
I'm not going to put the next generation on blast, but I'm saying that there's a lot of people that don't like to read that,
or maybe they don't have the time.
Yeah,
because audiobooks seem to be faster.
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
Because you have the voice for it, and it's so important that you have knowledge in here. And so I would just say that might be something that would be super helpful to hear, because it also reinforces. It's another.
Yeah, thing. Some people are auditory. Learners.
I learn through hearing.
Okay.
You know, I think if we would do this now, come to think of it, we wouldn't just put it on one disc.
Yeah.
We put it on four.
Yeah.
So that the friend or relative or whoever it is sends them, so you get four touches during the first year after you lose somebody.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So what are some common misconceptions people have about grief?
That it progresses in a kind of a linear, kind of a straight line function. You know, it gets better and better as time goes on. And actually grief bounces all over the place. You might be feeling great one day and rotten the next day, great one minute and rotten the next minute. It's all over the place, and you're bouncing all over. I think that's one conception. I think another is that you should get over it faster. You know, after all, it was only your grandparent, and your grandparent was 80 years old or 90 years old. You know, you need to move on. I think a misconception is that people supposedly should move on. And the more you want somebody to move on, the less they're going to move on.
Mm.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you say is the most important for a person to know after losing a loved one? The most important thing?
That they have other people around them who love them and care for them. So if you can be that kind of a person to love them and care for them, I think that's the greatest thing. You know, people who are there for you. That I think is really important to know. And I think another is that, you know, you're gonna be okay. You're not feeling okay right now. And maybe you don't believe this, that you're going to be okay. And if you don't believe me, that's okay. But I've seen other people been in situations like you. And of course you're unique. But I'm pretty sure that you're going to be okay, down the line.
Now, some of our listeners, they call in with their situations that are very sad. and one obstacle that one way we try to help, because we've all talked about the importance of having a support group, of having family and friends, and how much that helped us.
Mm-hmm.
What would you advise to someone who is dealing with a loss of whatever kind that's really somewhat isolated? They don't have family nearby. They, for whatever reason, they don't have
the support system.
What we've been telling them is they just have to find some type of community of people that are going through similar things and create, in a way, their support system, but to not do it on their own. Is that kind of...
Yeah, I'd say you could join a club, join a church. You know, what I did a couple months after my wife died is I started playing basketball. Mm-hmm. Again, I hadn't played basketball for like 20 years. I started playing. I've been playing now for ever since that time. And that basketball group became a community for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I joined a gang of 11, which is now I'm 12 in that group, and consisting of some of the basketball players. So get out and don't just sit in your own little hole, you know. And I did that a lot, too. I remember there was a time when I would come home from work on a Friday, and except for going to church and talking to people in the grocery store, I didn't see another person the whole weekend. Mm-hmm. You know,
why do we do that?
Yeah,
that's what Gina asked.
Yep.
Why do we do
so that? You can identify with that.
Yeah, go ahead, Terrell.
No, I was going to ask the same thing. TJ was, why is it that we isolate ourselves?
Oh, maybe we're shy. Maybe we just don't have the energy.
I also think maybe we don't. We know we're not in our best form, so we retreat, maybe.
Mm.
You know, yeah. We know something's wrong, and we always, I think humans always want to show their best foot, so maybe we kind of retreat.
Mm.
Yeah. Or maybe the vulnerability of it, you know, being always wanting to be in control and be strong, but you know you're vulnerable, so you don't want to go out there.
Yeah, yeah.
What would you say is the most important thing for a friend of a grieving person to know?
To listen, 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 and listen some more. And don't try to fix it. Don't try to encourage them. You can encourage them by being their friend, just being with them. If let's say they like fishing, you say, hey, you want to go fishing? Take them fishing. And if they say, I don't know, you say, look, I don't have anybody to go fishing with. I really need you to go fishing with me.
Mm-hmm.
And take them fishing. Yeah, I'd say just, you know, reach out to them and don't try to encourage them. Don't try to make them feel better. Mm-hmm. Just by relating to them, they're going to feel better.
That's great.
It is great.
Terrell?
No, I was, is grief the same? Is there different types of grief? Different levels, maybe I should say?
Yeah, there are different types. I think if you know somebody is sick and you can prepare for it, that's one thing. But in the sense of sudden deaths, that's, you know, I think people call that like that. That's complex grief, because that's very complex, because you didn't have any time to prepare for it. And also that it shouldn't have happened, you know? When you guys lost your mom, that shouldn't have happened.
Mm.
And it happened right away.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's like that, if the person has not been sick, that can cause a lot of problems. And I think when teenagers, for example, lose loved ones, very often, more than anybody, they lose people suddenly, and they had no idea that people were going to die. You know, automobile accidents or whatever it, these things like this. Whereas when you're older, your friends die of more natural causes. But when you're younger, they don't.
Yeah. What do you advise families who have young ones that are dealing with the loss? What do you advise the families to do to support the young ones?
Again, listen to them and get them to talk. And if they say, I'm really sad, and you say, I'm sad too. And if they start to cry, just hold them. And maybe cry too. Mm. The one thing that you got to be careful with younger kids is if you as an adult are just totally losing it and falling apart, you might want to hold that together for a little bit and then go find some fellow adults that you can fall apart with. Try not to fall apart around small kids because that can scare kids.
Is there an age where you should shield them from it, or every case different?
I think every case is different, but I think they need to be part of the whole process from the beginning.
We're with Dr. Ken Houck, and again, obviously you've been listening. He's an amazing resource, an amazing mind, and a great treat for us here. For more information on him, you can go to www.stephenministries.org. There are so many great books that I'm sure you could find something that's going to help you. And I'm really impressed, Dr. Ken. I think I'm really proud you're here, and I thank you.
Thank you.
But before I let you go, though, you have a new book called Cancer Now What. Is that correct? So, mm-hmm. And then you have the same website to learn about cancer. If you're dealing with cancer, which I think all of us at one point are going to deal with it in some way, whether it's ourselves or a loved one or friend, check out www.cancernowwhat.org. And this is a new book of yours. This one released just a month ago. Is that correct?
Yes.
Just a month ago. So what is Cancer Now What about?
It is a guidebook for people who have been diagnosed with cancer, or for their loved ones, family members, or whatever it is, to read, to help them navigate the cancer journey. Mm. About a third of the book has to do with medical things, like how to relate to medical people, pain management, second opinions, things like that. The other two-thirds are emotional, relational, and spiritual aspects. So
one of the bullet points is updating others without wearing yourself out.
Yeah.
My son had his appendix rupture, a little different thing, and I was in the hospital, and it was actually a very scary thing because his recovery was different. Okay. It wasn't a smooth recovery. But obviously with my brothers, family, and friends, everyone was invested in wanting to know. And I actually found myself kind of getting worn out in the updating process, you know? So it's like, is there anything you would advise or in terms of the updating?
Yes. Get somebody else to update for you.
Hmm.
Ask a friend. Tell a friend and saying, these are the people I want you to update. Would you please do that for me?
I don't know why I never thought of that. I don't know why I never thought about that, but that makes sense.
Many times we don't think of things that are so obvious. So you're like that too.
It's so funny because that never crossed my mind, and that's a very good advice. So thank you.
Yeah.
Because I had everyone asking, "How can I help? How can I help?" I don't know. You know, I'll keep you posted. But that's a perfect way to ask the help. I'll tell you what's going on, and you tell this person, this person, this person. And thank you.
Yeah.
Now, how about not letting cancer define you?
Yeah. Wow. Live your life as fully as you can. It's easy to say, don't let cancer define you. But I found my wife had cancer for three and a half years, and then she died. But during those 3.5 years, we took, I think, 23 overnight trips as a family.
Mm.
We went to Disney World a number of times during that. We went to Disneyland during that time. We took 3 cruises during that time. We went to Kansas City. We went to Branson, Missouri, where we could drive, because sometimes people with cancer shouldn't be on airplanes, and with all the stuff in the air there, they shouldn't get infected. So we drove. We went to Branson a number of times.
I love that.
Yeah,
like you lived life. You went for it. And you guys have anything?
No.
Okay.
I'm loving this.
And then one more question. What should someone do if they didn't have the chance to grieve a loss from many years ago?
Grieve it now. Talk to somebody. Cry. Find somebody who will understand that maybe somebody is still grieving 20 years later, and get them to talk about it.
How, you know? What would be, go ahead, Terrell.
No, I had a question.
This is my brother, so I know his, he doesn't say anything, yeah, yeah, but yeah. When he moves his body, that usually means I got something to say.
Go I did ahead, have Terrell. Something. What happens if you don't deal with grief?
Yeah. One thing, you know, you probably should deal with it as soon as you can. But grief is like something, you put it up on a shelf. And if you put grief up on a shelf and then you take it down later, it's bigger. It's really, and I know you all created this foundation, mm-hmm. you know, because of your own struggles in terms of grief. And but it's never too late to grieve. Never too late to talk about it. And here's something. I was going to say this before, but I do want to say this. I bet you really like it when people say the name Dee Dee Jackson.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you might even want to tell your friends, don't forget about my mom. How about every month, why don't you just say, I remember when I was over at your house, and I remember what your mom did, and she did this, and everything like that. And I mean, I love it when people say the name Joan, which was my wife's name. It's so cool.
I thank you for saying that, because I think what's so strange, I completely agree with you. My son goes to the school we went to where our mother was president of the Parents Association. So a lot of the old teachers, a lot of the teachers were there teaching us, are there teaching my son. And every now and then they'll come up to me and tell me a story or show me a picture, and there's no better feeling. So I completely agree with you. And what's so strange, though, I don't follow that. I don't reciprocate that to others, you know what I mean, who may have lost the parent. It's like, for me, it's so, I want to get over this. It's like a no-go zone.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if that's society's work on me. I don't know why I do that. But I want to be able to be happy and express people's, what I'm perceiving as their bad, you know, their loss or their trauma point.
Are you saying, like, if someone experiences loss, you don't feel like you should bring them up?
In a way, like if a friend of mine experienced the loss of a father,
you don't want to bring up the father. I'm with you on that.
And it's so,
I don't know why.
But when it's the other way around, they bring up mom, I'm smiling, yep. And I'm enjoying it, like you said. So I don't know why I can't follow through and pay it forward.
Yeah. Maybe it's a matter of discipline.
Yeah.
It's almost like writing it down, saying, mm-hmm. you know, I should do this. Sometimes we got to write things down, and sometimes we have to discipline ourselves.
Yeah.
Because we don't ordinarily do them. Mm-hmm. We forget doing them.
Yeah, awesome. All right, well, we're with Dr. Ken. We're going to wrap up our show. Dr. Ken Houck, you are an amazing person.
Thank you.
I'm laughing at you because sometimes people would say it to us and I'd have that same response. It's like, I don't know why you're saying that. But you really are, you know, and you're really helping so many people. And for people like us who've dealt with loss, serious loss as youngsters, and like my brothers and I always talk about, every time we do the show, we feel better about ourselves. You know, mm-hmm. we feel better getting it out and talking. And today is no different, perhaps more so than ever, from what you said and what you gave to us. So I thank you very, very much. Todd, was there anything?
No, I'm loving this. I think these books should be mandatory for everyone.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Well, and then, I know we're on time, but why doesn't society do a good enough job dealing with loss? It's like we celebrate winners. We celebrate the trophy winners. We celebrate champions.
It should almost be a class. It should almost be mandatory, a class in school.
Yeah, because loss is part of life, but we like skirt away from it.
Yeah, it is. And I think when appropriate, if you can cry more when it's appropriate, I think you're going to laugh more.
Mm.
At other appropriate times.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's a great one.
So before we close, Dr. Ken, www.stephenministries.org. We like to give our guests 30 seconds or whatever to say whatever they want. Say whatever's on your mind, whatever you want our listeners to take away, whatever, anything you got you want to say, you got the floor for a good 20, 30 seconds.
Okay. I guess I would say, what do you say to somebody who has just been diagnosed with a serious illness or lost somebody? I just like to repeat what I said. First thing you say to him is, it's good to see you. Mm. Second thing you do is maybe hug him. Or that might be the third thing, but after saying it's good to see you, just say, I'm sorry.
That's it.
All right.
Great. That's it.
I love that. Great.
Thank you so much. And you are listening to the D.D. Jackson Foundation's Power of Love. We will be back next Wednesday from 1 to 2. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Power of Love. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Support for our Power of Love radio show comes from a variety of generous donors, including supporters from institutions, individuals, and corporations through the D.D. Jackson Foundation. DDJF is a nonprofit 501c3 organization.